You're listening to Trek FM.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Sir, it's time for you to stop this unhealthy behavior.
No, it's not.
You need to take responsibility for your life.
Not right now, I don't.
And it starts by raising your son.
I'm sorry. I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
The young orphan you adopted at the gala, remember?
Wow! Stairs! Whee!
Oh. He's been living here for the past week.
Hello, table!
And I must say, I've grown rather fond of the young lad.
Hello, secret camera.
You should get to know him. You and he have a lot in common.
Oh, God.
Alfred, you've been watching way too many Lifetime movies. Whoops.
Hey.
Wait, what are you doing?
Dusty?
Welcome, everybody, to the 602 Club. Welcome to Gotham, everybody. I hope everybody's having a good time. Not everybody can be as cool as me or my co-host this week, but hopefully you can try. We're not actually going to talk like that all episode, I promise. But we're excited. We're going to be here in the 602 Club talking about the Lego Batman movie. And I am very excited to have a guy who... This was one of your biggest anticipated films, was it not, Mr. Schindler?
For the year, yeah, I'd say it's up there. Yeah, for sure.
Excellent. Then I have had the right person here in the 602 Club. Welcome back. It's great to have you.
No, thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Well, before we dive into the Lego Batman movie, just a reminder, of course, you can find all of the shows that we do here on Trek FM on iTunes at itunes.com/TrekFM. We are a featured provider there. Now, while you're in iTunes, hit up the 602 Club with a star rating and review. Just looking as I say that right now. And no new reviews, so no one to thank at this moment. I will call out the most recent review from Hobbs-1. Thank you so much for your 5-star review. Really means a lot. And the tagline there at the top just says Greg. So I'm assuming that I should thank you, Greg. We really appreciate your 5-star review. And follow Greg's example. Go over there to the 602 Club on iTunes and give us your star rating and review and let us know what you think of the show. Also, help the show grow. Help other people find us by doing that. You can find us on Twitter at TrekFM, Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. If you have any thoughts or anything about any of the episodes we've done, ideas for episodes, you can go over to trek.fm/contact, just choose a show, choose the 602 Club. That'll come straight to me and any of the co-hosts that week. And then, of course, you can find us on the Babel Conference, which is the listeners-only discussion group, and it's a great place to dive in with other listeners about everything we're talking about here on the 602 Club and across Trek FM. Go to Facebook, type Babel into the search field there, or... If you're on our website at trek.fm, which is a great place to go to check out all the different shows, show pages, click discussion on any of those menu bars, and it'll bring you to the Babel Conference as well. Well, Micah, you know, this is a movie that I feel like we were building a lot of anticipation for. And I know for me, I really liked the Lego movie even more than I thought I would. Now, right up front, I grew up playing with Legos as a kid. Like, legitimately, hours upon hours. Okay, so I still play with Legos. But I would spend hours doing it as a child. And so to see that come to life, and just the Lego movie surprised me with the depth that it had, and it turned out to be just a very good film. And so, you know, coming into Lego Batman, my expectations were pretty high coming off of that. What about you kind of coming into this film?
Yeah, I was definitely anticipating it. I mean, anytime you have a new Batman movie, I'm always looking forward to it. But I think, you know, as far as the Lego movie stuff is concerned, I think they really kind of proved themselves with that one because, you know, like you're saying, it's kind of ridiculous to think that a movie based on Lego would be good. You know, there's no reason to think that it would be. And, you know, it was really kind of crazy outside of the box thinking, no pun intended, that made that movie work. You know, the idea that it was very, very much an adaptation of what, you know, the toy is, you know, and it's got some really, you know, sort of interesting subversive thinking going on in its messages and everything, saying like, don't follow the instructions, you know, just take these things and do whatever you want with them, be creative, you know, that sort of thing. And I think that was really kind of crazy. And I'm actually shocked that they were able to get away with that. And I mean, was it super entertaining? I don't know. I think I admire that movie more than I actually like it. Although I do think it's a decent movie, but I wasn't like head over heels in love with it like the rest of the world was. But definitely my favorite part of that movie was Batman. I thought that all that stuff was absolutely amazing and hilarious and sort of a very interesting and cool and funny take on the character. So when I heard that, you know, they were doing a spin-off movie with Lego Batman, I was like, excellent. I cannot wait. And then, you know, when they got Seth Graham Smith to write it and, you know, they had the, you know, Chris McKay from Robot Chicken directing it and everything, I'm like, this is going to be solid. I cannot wait for this movie. And I was definitely very highly anticipating this film.
No, I think you're right on when you're talking about just the Lego movie and the way in which it was able to, I think, I don't think anybody really expected there to be such a human element to that film, you know, mm-hmm. and I mean that in both ways, figuratively and literally. And the way that I think raised the bar for the film, and like you were talking about the messages that it had about creativity and letting your creativity kind of run wild and see where it takes you and all of those things. And also, I think, the way of the connection between the father and the son there was really nice. And all of those things, I think, it takes a movie that could have just been very blasé. I mean, come on, we've had a lot of movies based on games and or toys, and most of them have not been good. I mean, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Battleship, I mean, the list goes on, and none of these movies, except for maybe the first Transformers, is passable, it's enjoyable, it's fun. I wouldn't say it's a great movie, but it's, you know. For the most part, though, you know, you haven't had a good track record, but it felt like that the WB and the writers, the Warner Brothers Pictures, I mean, not the WB as in the old TV station.
Warner Bros.
Yeah, the old TV studio, but that they really put a lot of thought into what they wanted to do with the Lego movie. So again, I think they did set the expectations pretty high moving into the Lego Batman movie. And I guess, so talking about that, what were your first impressions kind of coming out of the Lego Batman movie?
Coming out of it? Well, I watched it with my wife, and she was a huge Batman fan as well. And I think coming out of it, our first impression was like, oh my God, the thing that she first said to me is like, we totally messed that up. We should have watched every Batman thing prior to this, because it is so jam-packed with so many, not just references, but really sort of like a deconstruction of the character that, you know, in order to appreciate what they were doing in this movie fully, it would really help to have sort of a good knowledge of really every incarnation of the character. And I think our first, you know, reaction coming out of the theater was like, you know, we have to go home and watch all of the Batman movies and read all of the Batman comics right now so that we can come back and see it again and really dig deep into what was going on in this movie, because it's incredibly dense and it's very, very awesome. And I think that it's easily the best movie I've seen so far this year. But yeah, that was my initial reaction. What about you?
Yeah, no, I think you're right on in the sense that one of the things that I liked was that the Warner Brothers Pictures and the writers and the creators of the film, they definitely love Batman, and they put that everywhere on screen. And not only that, but they lovingly care for all of the incarnations of Batman, you know, from Batman v Superman all the way back to the 1960s Batman.
Even further back than that, all the way back to the original serials.
Exactly. Well, and all the way back to the first, you know, comic.
Oh, yeah,
so
the first comic, too.
I think what's wonderful about it is that you can tell that they have spent a lot of time studying all that stuff so that they can get their references right. And I think that's one of the joys of the film is getting to pick all those out and seeing them come up. And, you know, it is a lot of fun in that sense. I think you're absolutely right that they really do kind of nail all of those. And I think in a lot of ways, that's kind of the draw is for most adults. You know, we're going to see a kid's movie. So, but they really do pay attention to their Batman lore. Again, from BVS all the way down to, you know, Detective Comics. So it's a really nice job that they do. And I think if there's anything that can be said for the film as a huge highlight, that's probably a number one.
But it's more than that. It's way more than just saying like, hey, you know, look, there's a nod to, you know, Batman and Robin, or there's a nod to the animated series, which they have those for sure. And, when that happens, you're like, hey, that's great. But really what it does more than that is really sort of examine what it is that makes Batman Batman and sort of dissect, you know, the mythology and, you know, in particular, a very sort of like weird aspect of the mythology, which doesn't really make a lot of sense in most incarnations. And that's the idea of the Bat family, you know?
Yeah.
And sort of get into it, it gets into not only why he has the Bat family, but also why, you know, on the flip side of that, kind of like why, for the most part, he's a loner, why he doesn't have the Bat family. And it's kind of weird to be talking about this in, you know, a movie based on a toy line. But I mean, it really does get, you know, pretty deep into, you know, the psychology of the character in a way that I think is more effective than most of the quote unquote serious movies, which try to do that. I mean, how many times have we seen his parents get killed in that freaking alley, you know? And how many times has it actually added to the story? How many times has that deep brooding, him talking with someone about it or whatever, really added to, you know, our understanding of the character? Not that many, you know, comparatively speaking. And yet here, it adds a lot. It really gets into like what that did to him psychologically and why he is a loner. And I think that that's really, really impressive.
Well, I know. I think that's something good to talk about, this whole idea of kind of formatting the character of Batman. And, you know, it does a comedic job of showing that Batman has become like the worst version of himself, in the sense of that he's totally cut himself off from everyone, even almost Alfred. You know, that he doesn't want anybody near him. And that's kind of, I think, created this real needy selfishness in him, you know, like his only identity is as Batman. Like, and I thought that was kind of funny that they always have him in the cowl.
Yeah.
Even when he's just at home, because his whole identity is wrapped up in being Batman and absolutely nothing else. And yeah, that is an interesting look at the psychology of Batman. But you're right. It's formatted in the experience in the alleyway. And his goal is to never allow somebody to get close to him again, so he doesn't have to experience that loss. He cut himself off from the entire world because that's the only way he knows to keep himself safe anymore. Yeah. So yeah, you're right. It does do that for sure. And I think it does it in a very like I said, comedic way, but it's definitely there for sure.
I mean, you know, I always think about this anytime I see any incarnation of Batman, really. I always think about how I was at a convention one year and they were giving their presentation. You know, DC was giving their presentation and it was Dan DiDio who was up on stage and he was talking about the differences between like Superman and Batman and in particular what makes Batman work so well. And he's like, Superman is Superman. You put him in any story, he's pretty much always the same. There's not much that you can do with that character that's, you know, outside of the norm. But Batman is an extremely malleable character who can fit into basically any type of story that you need to fit him into. He can be in The Dark Knight and be super serious and super realistic, or he can be in Lego Batman and be like a toy, you know, who's cracking jokes. And you can adapt the character and change it and make it fit into whatever story you're trying to tell, and he always works. And that's one of the reasons why he's such an impressive character, because he can be whatever you need him to be, you know, and it won't break the character. It's not like you're altering the character in order to, you know, so that he's no longer Batman, you know? And I found that to be really interesting, and it, you know, and now every time I see anything, any incarnation of Batman, I always kind of appreciate it, and it helps me to kind of understand that there is no definitive version of Batman, and that, you know, Lego Batman is not any more or less legitimate than, say, Ben Affleck Batman, you know? It's all Batman. It's all true. It's all real. It's all part of the overall mythology. And, you know, it should be accepted. You know, it shouldn't just be like a one-off that people are like, oh, that was fun. You know, I mean, it should be, you know, looked at with this as much, you know, of a critical eye as, say, Batman versus Superman, you know?
And see, that's the thing where I disagree completely with Dan on that. Okay. I, not on the Batman part, because I think you're absolutely right, but I disagree with the Superman part, because I don't think Superman's that cookie cutter of a character. I think that does a disservice to the Superman character, and that's why you end up with such bad Superman movies and or bad Superman comics, is because there's that fundamental misunderstanding of who the character of Superman is. That's a whole other story. If you want to hear my take on Superman, did a show last year with John Mills about Superman, and that's all we talked about. So, but I think that's absolutely correct, though, because they do approach Batman with that, and there is this core to who Batman is, but you can take him lighter or darker, and so that he can fit in something that's more of a comedy, or as Alfred likes to call it, your psychedelic phase from the 60s. Or you can take it to the Dark Knight Batman v Superman extreme, you know, where you've got the character who's almost at his breaking point. You know, he's almost completely something you almost don't recognize, but still the kernel is there. And I think they found that in this movie, and I think that is very helpful. Now, while doing this whole character thing, I think it's also great that, you know, the whole arc is him learning that he can't cut himself off from the world, that he does need others, that Batman can't just stand alone. And I think, to me, that was, you know, I guess the depth that we'd get in this film of Batman going through that arc of finding out that even Batman can't do it by himself all the time. And Batman shouldn't do it by himself all the time, because it's hurting himself, but it's also hurting others, because people need him. They need him to be open with them and teach them and be friends and all that kind of stuff. And I thought that was a good message, because in general, I mean, how many of us have been hurt in life and want to pull away, and just we end up hurting people around us and hurting ourselves in the same process, because we're not willing to open back up. And that's a great message for kids to learn. You know, life sucks, but you got to get back up and get back at it the next day. And Batman takes them a long time to learn that in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. But it makes sense. It really does make sense, you know, because, I mean, one of the things that he has to do is kind of accept what it is that is, you know, causing the problem in the first place and sort of deal with that issue before he can move on and become, you know, a part of a team, you know. And I think that that works out pretty well.
Well, and this was the interesting thing for me. And we're going to like, we're going to be kind of jumping around all over the place. So definitely, obviously, there's tons of spoilers here. So, you know, you've been warned. But, you know, this whole idea of character and really it gets me to the end of the movie. Because something that actually kind of bothered me was this whole idea of that I had a problem with the way the movie ends. That it's him trying to convince Joker to help him save the city.
Mm-hmm.
When I felt like that it should have been him admitting that he needs the help of the Justice League that he never calls on. And I don't like the end. I don't like the way it ends. I don't like that it's the Joker that he's trying to convince, because that doesn't make any sense, because the Joker is the bad guy. And I get the whole like funny part of the, that I need you, but I hate you. You know, we, that whole, basically it's the Dark Knight for kids here. Actually really it's the Killing Joke for kids.
I was going to say it's the Killing Joke for kids. And that's why I think it does work,
but it doesn't work here because, it doesn't work in a funny setting. It works in the serious setting of the Killing Joke. It doesn't work as a funny setting. And that's why I feel like you need to substitute the Joker for the Justice League. Because it doesn't work here, because the message is all weird then, especially for kids. Like, Joker's an all-in-all bad guy, you know? So calling him and asking him to save the city, he's not going to save the city. He's not going to have a heart in the end. Like, it doesn't... It just... That's where it totally fell apart, and it's like I didn't buy it.
Yeah, no, I definitely disagree with that, because, you know, I mean, as soon as they started doing the Joker thing at the beginning, I was like, wow, yeah, this is straight up part of the mythology. This is very much the dynamic that Batman and Joker have, where, you know, the idea is, especially more from Joker's perspective than Batman's perspective, because Batman is kind of like, you know, I need to stop Joker. You know, he is not a good presence here. The reason why I exist is to get rid of Joker, but I don't want to be Batman. You know, that's kind of Batman's side of it. Joker's side of it is, you know, Batman is his audience. Batman is the person who he's constantly trying to impress. You know, a lot of people say, like, the Joker is in love with Batman. You know, that's not an unusual concept. That's something which runs through a lot of the comics, and I think that that's very, very true. You know, the Joker is constantly trying to impress Batman. He's constantly trying to get Batman's attention. He's trying to make Batman laugh. You know, I mean, that's all throughout the animated series. That's, you know, throughout Killing Joke. And while Batman will not exist without the Joker, that's what Batman wants. Batman wants to be able to you know, hang up the cowl, right? But for Joker, he wants to exist. Joker needs Batman to exist, because if Batman doesn't exist, there is no Joker, and that would, you know, destroy him. He would cease to exist, you know. And the way that they set that up at the beginning of the movie, I thought was incredibly solid. But the way that they bring it together at the end, while maybe not completely true to, you know, the dramatic whatever, I think that it does work, because it is showing, it is playing into the theme of Batman needing people and admitting that he needs people, whether they are family or villains or whatever. But it's also the type of thing where it's not, you know, the Joker from, you know, Dark Knight or the Killing Joke, where he is like this mass murderer who needs to go to jail forever and ever. I mean, he's mischievous, you know, he is still just a toy. And, you know, it's not like they're getting really hardcore with this character. So I think the idea of sort of like Batman, you know, accepting Joker you know, and saying like, hey, you know, you are of value to me. I hate you, you know, that kind of thing. And the Joker sort of like feeling accepted and sort of like taking that acceptance and turning it into a positive thing and turning, you know, seeing the error in his ways in a sense, even if it's for just, you know, that moment in time and joining with Batman to save the city. I think that that's a really good message for this movie. And it's also a really good message for kids, you know, and sort of saying like, you know, you don't always have to be the bad guy. You know, if you do something wrong, if you're a bully or whatever like that, you can still change your ways. You can still, you know, save the day. And, you know, hey, you don't always have to, you know, punish the people who are bad guys.
It's like a Wilson Phillips song.
It's, you know, I mean, it's pretty deep. You know, it's a pretty good message for kids. It's like it's not black and white. You know, people can be bad and then be good, you know, that sort of thing. And I don't know, bringing Justice League into it, I mean, they could have done that, but that to me would have been like really unwieldy. And it, to me, it would have been nothing more than an extension of bringing the Bat Family into it. I mean, that's the same sort of thing. Whereas I think by doing this with Joker, it's kind of like the opposite end of the spectrum, and it's dealing with some other issues which are bigger than just, you know, like, hey, Justice League, come on and help me, you know?
Well, no,
I don't
see,
know.
But that's where I disagree, because again, I think the whole premise of this is with the Bat Family, you know, Robin and Batgirl, and then with the Justice League, it's Batman doesn't ask for help, you know, and I think that's the important message that they missed, was Batman putting himself out there and saying, I need your help. To people that he doesn't normally ask for help from. And it got, and you know, I get what they're trying to do with the Joker, and that's, I mean, it's a cute thing, but, you know, let's be honest, Joker is a psychopathic murderer,
continuities.
No,
is he
in this continuity, I mean, he's trying to destroy the city. You know, he's legitimately tried to blow up the city at the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah, but is anyone going to die from that happening? I mean,
Batman's there to stop him. But my point is
no. But what I'm saying
goal.
Is, like, does anyone die in the Lego universe? You know,
well,
I mean, I don't know.
No, they don't die because Batman stops him. But my point is his goal was to destroy the city. So I think the message would have been stronger and more in keeping with the arc that Batman is on, which is the main character, and that's all that matters, if it had been him asking not just for help from the Bat Family, but also asking for help from the people he never asks help for and never invite him to parties because they know they're not wanted. You know, that's like... It was funny that he goes to the party and nobody realizes that Batman's even there, because Batman's never there. They never, you know, Batman's not a part of the Justice League. So I just felt like the theme would have been stronger and less muddled if it had been those people they asked him for. I had no problem with him asking or accepting the help of the villains who were slighted by Joker. And I thought that was really fun, you know, having him work with all those villains who, well, they're kind of mad at Joker too, and they don't want the city destroyed. It got a little too cutesy to have them have to embrace at the end, and like, you know, help save the city with Batman and Joker hugging, basically. And it was just like, this is too much.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that at all, you know, and I do think that, you know, while I see what you're saying with him asking help from, you know, people who he, you know, never sort of acknowledges up until this point, I think that there's enough of that going on, you know, throughout the movie, especially, you know, in the ending, that you don't really need to bring in the Justice League there, and then you run into all sorts of problems in that, you know, Batman really doesn't belong in the Justice League, because, you know, I mean, when you're faced with a threat like that, it's like, okay, you know, you've got, you know, all these people who are, you know, superhuman, you know, I mean, once Superman's there, you know, Batman can pretty much just sit on the side and do nothing, because he's Superman, you know? So, you know, especially in this where you need to basically, you know, make sure that Batman is still, you know, the hero, even though he's, you know, he needs help. I think that bringing the Justice League in would have just made things a little more complicated, a little too busy and big and, you know, unnecessary.
Well, having read in a lot of Justice League comics, Batman is definitely needed in the Justice League. I can tell you that.
He's the brains of the operation.
Well, not
operation.
Just the brain. I mean, he's not the only brains, but I mean, he brings the cynicalness, you know, which is needed for a lot of heroes that have nothing but optimism.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Phlox, you kind of need that balance, and he adds the balance. So, no, I think too, and we're continuing kind of this whole idea of the character, but I want to move a little bit to just kind of the story itself and kind of the editing structure of the film, because for me, there's the first part of the movie, which is really fun. You've got, you know, all the big heist with Joker and Batman stopping them and all that stuff, and then you get this like lull, and it's just like, lol, lol, lol. I mean, it's like 3-5 minutes in an animated movie of Batman just doing nothing but eating by himself, watching movies by himself, and it's not well paced. It's badly edited at that point. It's like you needed to cut that stuff down, because we get it. Batman's a loner. He eats alone. He watches movies alone. Like, it just takes a little bit too long for that section to end. And it was just too much. Let me put it this way. After seeing the film, I feel like this movie needed to be a straight to DVD hour film. It didn't need to be a full animated feature because the joke plays itself out and they let the joke linger on too much, which is strange coming from the, you know, director of Robot Chicken, where you have, you know, 3-minute skits and that's it.
Yeah, I don't agree with that, really. I think that that sequence in the middle was hilarious, you know, and I if it lasted 5 minutes or whatever, it didn't feel like that, because I think each little bit added something to it. And, you know, I was constantly sort of just like, there's so much going on in terms of, like, you know, I guess world building, you know, they have a knack for world building, as they say in La La Land or whatever, that, you know, I was just kind of like fascinated by all of it. You know, I thought it was really funny, but I was also like really sort of interested in, like, well, this is how Batman lives, you know, this is his life. And I thought that like the comic timing and a lot of that stuff was really, really funny, especially like considering the fact that it was an animated thing. Just, and I think a lot of that, it reminded me a lot of like sort of like the comic timing in Robot Chicken, and that stuff just cracked me up, you know. And it was weird, because like even in that sequence, you know, throughout the entire movie, there's so much going on, and you know, every single moment of the movie, you know, like halfway through or whatever, I was like, I need to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, I can't. I, like, you know, most movies or whatever, you can be like, okay, I know how this scene is going to play out. I'm going to just sneak out right now and I'll be right back and whatever. With this movie, I was like, I cannot leave my seat, because I know that I'm going to miss like 15 things if I do, even though I know, like, in terms of the narrative, what's going to happen in this next scene, I'm going to miss like a million jokes and a million, you know, sort of like insights into the character or the world or whatever. Because it was jam-packed. And, I mean, I guess I was feeling a bit of fatigue because it was so, you know, like, relentless throughout the entire movie. And I can see maybe, you know, tightening up, like, maybe the last, you know, 20 minutes a little bit. You know, maybe making it, you know, like, 5 or 10 minutes shorter. But on the whole, I mean, I think is true of pretty much any comic book movie. You know, usually when we get to the climax, I'm like, okay, how long is it going to take them to beat the big bad guy this time? You know, and then it usually takes about 5 minutes longer than it should. So I'm not going to really knock it for that. But on the whole, I thought, you know, it was really well paced, and I thought it did a great job of making every moment count, you know, and always adding something to it.
Yeah, and I think for me personally, the one note joke about Batman and who he is, I felt like they rung the gong too many times with that one. And I feel like what you said, I was just a little fatigued with it kind of being the same joke repeatedly. And I didn't find as many, and I've been thinking about the movie a lot after I saw it. And the more I thought about it, the less I thought of it. And that's never a good sign for me. The more I kind of find to like pick apart at things, and it was frustrating because I love Batman and I love, you know, the DC universe. And so I didn't enjoy that I came away feeling like that. So, but I'm glad to hear that you didn't, you know, and I think that just speaks that there will be people who just absolutely are buying it and love it. And then there are those that don't, and that's just the way it goes, you know, with anything. So I wish that I had felt a little bit more like you did, because I guess, yeah, I just kind of came away feeling like if this had been an hour long at home, I guess I would have felt like it that's what it needed, you know, like one of their Lego specials that they do.
Yeah, I mean, you say like the more you think about it, the less, you know, you think of it. And I mean, I really have had sort of the opposite reaction to it, where, you know, coming out of it, I was like, oh, that was so much fun because it was funny and, you know, hey, and jokes. And then thinking about it, the more that I think about it, the more I think about, you know, sort of like how it was, you know, really kind of like dissecting the character and commenting on what the character is and what the mythology is and, you know, how that applies to all the other things that we've seen of Batman, and how, you know, the next time I watch The Dark Knight, I'm going to view it through a different lens because I saw Lego Batman. And, you know, that makes me like it even more. You know, I think that I need to see this again for sure, like really soon. But I think that that I appreciate it more now than I did when I came out of it.
That is that's fascinating to me, because I guess, yeah, I don't see it, and that bothers me that I don't see it. Maybe that's just the way it is. Yeah, one of the things that I really did like about the movie and the way they kind of constructed the story was the fact that in the Phantom Zone, they had all these great villains from across the spectrum.
Of Warner Brothers properties.
Yeah, basically of Warner Brothers. But it added those were where the jokes, like, it wasn't just about the Batman, but it became then a meta narrative about movies in general. And so, you know, when you have the Gremlins and Sauron and the Flying Monkeys and Voldemort and all that stuff I was finding really enjoyable. And it added a extra layer of funny, I felt like, in those scenes, especially during the end, that, okay, it's not just about the DC jokes, but it's now about, you know, movies that we kind of grew up with, you know, from all across the spectrum, from Wizard of Oz to the 80s to, you know, I just, the Lord of the Rings, I thought that was great. And I really enjoyed that they went that far, because it also kind of brought up, so are all those just the different Earths, you know, like you have the Lord of the Rings Earth, you know, that they pull, you know, yeah. the Wizard of Oz Earth.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have any problem with that necessarily. I you know, on further reflection, I think, like, unlike the Lego movie, which was very much sort of about Lego, you know, I think that this kind of falls into the same category as the Lego Star Wars movies that you know, Michael Price does, where the Lego aspect to it is almost secondary. It is definitely secondary, but it's almost unnecessary. And it, I mean, it's fine. It works. It's not like it hurts it, But at the same time, part of me kind of wishes, like, if this were just straight up animated and it wasn't actually Lego, then it would probably be stronger because it's much more of a Batman movie than it is a Lego movie. And, you know, the bringing in the other characters, you know, that kind of thing, I think that that was in a lot of ways sort of like a nod to the Lego nature of it all.
Yeah, the Lego and dimensions, really.
Yeah, yeah. So I kind of wish that that stuff wasn't in there just because it would have made it a bit more streamlined. And also, I mean, to be fair, I didn't get half the jokes because I don't know what a Harry Potter is. I've, you know, seen like 2 episodes of Doctor Who and, you know, maybe 1.5, you know, Hobbit movies or something, you know, so I'm like, I don't care about any of this stuff. You know, I mean, that's just kind of part of it. I was like, did they get Ralph Fiennes? Because he's right there anyway.
Yeah,
why did they get Ralph Fiennes?
I was thinking the same thing, but it's not.
But it's
like,
not. It's like Eddie Izzard or something.
Yeah,
like that,
it is
right?
Eddie Izzard, which I thought it was hilarious that Ralph Fiennes is Alfred. And then he didn't also play Voldemort. But the problem is that they sound too similar. So kids
do they?
Would just. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, his voice is indistinguishable. Like, if you watch a scene, just pick a scene on YouTube of Voldemort and listen. I mean, kids wouldn't be able to distinguish then. Why is Alfred all of a sudden Voldemort?
Mm-hmm.
it would have been bad. So, which leads me to the character foundations and the voice work. So, I mean, there's tons of people here. We're not going to talk through all of them. I don't even think we need to talk about Will Arnett because, I mean, he is genius in this role.
Yeah,
there's what can you say? But the one I really wanted to ask you about the most is Zach Galifianakis is the Joker.
Yeah.
And what did you think? Because I came away with a distinct impression, but I want to hear what you had to say first.
I wasn't really a huge fan. I mean, I think he did a serviceable job, but he wasn't a standout to me at all. You know, I think that we've heard a lot of, various interpretations of the Joker over the years. And I mean, obviously, I mean, Mark Hamill is the Joker and everyone else is just sort of like a variation on that. And I don't think that Galifianakis's performance brought anything special to the table. It's certainly not the direction that I would have gone in. Is it a bad, you know, performance? No, not at all. But it doesn't rise to another level in the same way that, you know, Will Arnett does, you know, with Batman.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right because Will Arnett has been able to create his own Batman. You know, it is Lego Batman. He is the Lego Batman now. The same way that you kind of think of the Christian Bale Batman, you know, or you know, as we move on, we probably think of Ben Affleck the same way, or, you know, even Michael Keaton's Batman, or all the way back, you know, to the Goofy show in the 60s. You know, you have all these different Batmans you think of, and they have kind of put their mark. This Joker, I honestly don't understand why they just didn't get Mark Hamill to do it. And maybe they couldn't because he was filming Star Wars at the time, but, like, just get Hamill to do Joker because there's no reason to not do it, if you ask me.
I mean, I see a reason not to do it. I see you wanting to make it its own thing. You know, I mean, everyone else is different. You
but
know,
if everybody's
going to
be thinking, man, I wish it had just been Mark Hamill when they come out.
Well, I think what you need to do is find someone. I mean, in the same way that everyone thinks of Kevin Conroy and you bring Will Arnett in and he brings, you know, something different to the table. I think you need to find someone who's really going to bring something different to the table. And I think, you know, maybe they thought that was Zach Galifianakis. You know, I mean, certainly he's a very broad comedian, someone who on paper might be a good choice, but, you know, it didn't really work as well. I mean, thinking like, who would I get? I'd have to really think about it, you know, but I don't know. I can't, I mean, no one comes to mind off the top of my head, but, you know, maybe Tony Hale, you know, maybe keep it in the Arrested Development family. I don't know. I could definitely see him doing it. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think I would have gone with Mark Hamill just because, with the exception of Billy Dee Williams, there's no one who's like reprising their roles from like another, you know, incarnation. And I think that that is the correct way to go about it, you know.
Which, speaking of Billy Dee Williams, he did not have enough lines in this movie. Like, I needed more Billy Dee.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
Yeah. I do have to say, I thought it's wonderful that Michael Cera can still sound like a 9-year-old boy.
Yeah.
His Robin was a lot of fun.
It worked really well.
I thought it was fantastic. And then, you know, Ralph Fiennes as Alfred Pennyworth, I thought was really good too. Brought a lot of fun to that role. Any other of the voice actors that we get, anybody else stand out to you at all that you know, is watching the film, that it could be as small or big a character as we got?
Yeah, I mean, Rosario Dawson was really good, obviously. You know, I love sort of the idea of Channing Tatum as, you know, Superman.
That was awesome.
That really, you know, works for me. And Jonah Hill as Green Lantern, because Green Lantern really is always sort of like the kind of like, why are you here sort of thing, you know?
sad, because if you read the comics, Hal Jordan is just an incredible character. And
you know, I totally bought
never
into
been
that.
Done
I,
service.
I totally bought into that for years and years and years. And then it took me about a good 10 years before I finally realized, like, you know what? I don't think I've ever read or seen a Hal Jordan story which I've liked. I'm pretty much convinced at this point that Hal Jordan is just a crap character. And if you want to do Green Lantern, you should either get Kyle Rayner or Guy Gardner. Because Guy Gardner is the bomb.
No. I've read plenty of Green Lantern, and Hal Jordan is fantastic. Especially in, I'm thinking, he's great in Rebirth with... Green Lantern Rebirth. He was excellent in Blackest Night.
I mean, all these are Geoff Johns things, right? I'm totally over Geoff Johns.
Well,
there's another guy.
Yeah, Geoff Johns is a fantastic comic book writer, though.
Someone needs to point me to the good Geoff Johns stories, because I keep on reading the ones that people say I should be reading, and I'm like, this, nothing happens. This is 120 pages of nothing. What's going on here? When's he going to write something?
Brightest Day is also good too. So
okay,
I personally, I love Geoff Johns. I've read a ton of his work, last year I read an exorbitant amount of comics that I had, like big events that I'd missed, and a lot of them are written by Geoff. And I will say that in DC, almost nobody understands the world, the universe, as well as he does. He gets all the characters relate to one another. He gets the characters themselves pretty much better than anybody. And he's a fantastic writer. So, having read so much Green Lantern, I like Hal Jordan. I like him with Jon Stewart too. Those two together are fantastic, because Hal Jordan's the cocky son of a, and John Stewart's more the kind of straight man, and they play really well together in the comics, especially right now. So, I'm trying to think if there's anybody that really stuck out to me that I really enjoyed. And I guess I got to say, Ellie Kepner as Phyllis, the block running. Phantom Zone was hysterical. I love her voice, and she's so good at that kind of stuff. So, yeah, nobody else really stood out to me. I think they all did a good job for the most part. The only person Zach Galifianakis, not great. But just FYI, it has come out that Rosario Dawson would actually like to play a live-action Ahsoka, so I'm all for that. So
yeah, anytime someone says something like, Rosario Dawson wants to play a live-action Ahsoka, my response is always, me too. Because why not?
Yeah.
I would love to play a live-action Ahsoka.
Yeah.
But when I read that, my thinking was like, you're saying this when you're promoting a voice acting gig Meanwhile, Ahsoka has someone who has been performing that for freaking years and is perfectly capable, I'm sure, of, you know, performing live action Ahsoka.
Yes, she could, and I would have no problems with it. so it would be wonderful if they actually did that. But thinking about just kind of assembling the music and in the animation, I wanted to ask you just kind of about how you thought all of that worked, especially because, I mean, for me, I felt like they really upped their game animation-wise from the Lego movie to this movie.
Yeah, I don't know if they really upped their game necessarily. I thought it was really good, but I thought it was really good in Lego movie as well. I mean, I love the way that they do animate these movies where it feels like it's stop-motion animation. It feels like something that you would do with Lego at home, you know, with your camcorder or whatever the kids use these days. And, you know,
iPhones.
Yeah, yeah. And I always really, like, loved that, like, aesthetic of the first one and the way that, you know, the pieces almost look like they're being photographed and they have, like, all the little, like, you know, damage, you know, from playing with them, scratches or whatever. And you know, all that stuff was really good. I do have to say, I was debating really, you know, hard whether or not to see this movie in 2D or 3D, because the 3D is so good in the original Lego movie. And I opted for 2D just because it was an IMAX and the only show that they had. And I thought it looked fantastic. And I thought that, you know, it sounded fantastic as well. I mean, you mentioned the music. The score, I thought, was perfect because it really did sound sort of like an animated version of, you know, the Hans Zimmer stuff in Dark Knight, you know, and that kind of thing. And I thought it was a great score and a great, you know, sounding movie on the whole. And yeah, you're right that the animation was really, really good. Yeah.
I'm right there with you. I feel like that, and when I say that they just upped their game, I feel as though that the animation, it just looked crisper and clearer, and the look of all the pieces was even more defined. You know, you really did feel as though you were in a Lego set, you know, you could see all the individuals. I mean, even thinking of when they're breaking into the plane at the beginning and they're using the fire and it's all these little fire pieces that are falling, you know, just the attention to detail is phenomenal. Being somebody who is a fan of the toy Lego, it looks amazing. And I agree with you too. The score, it does sound like kind of a culmination of all the Batman scores kind of into its own thing. And then the music choices that they chose were just super fun throughout the film, you know, Cutting Crew and things like that playing throughout the film. Those were some of the things that had me laughing the hardest when certain songs just came on. And, you know, when Robin's getting, you know, changing his clothes and he's looking for a song and it's Wake Me Up Before You Go, Girl. And I'm like, oh, no kid is going to get where that song comes from, but it's just hysterical, you know, really good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they did a good job with the music. Yep.
So I guess it all comes down to the big question then of what do you rate Lego Batman?
I guess if I'm rating it on like a 4-star scale, I would probably go with like 3.5 stars. I do think that it is the best movie of the year so far. And, you know, to be completely honest, this year has started off, you know, fantastically well, you know, as far as movies are concerned. We've had a lot of really, really solid movies come out the last few weeks. And this one, I think, is definitely the best of all of them, which is really saying a lot. I mean, it could very easily end up on my top 10 at the end of the year. And I think that it's really interesting because this is the fifth film, the fifth Batman movie to be released theatrically in the span of a year, which is insane. I mean, what kind of, you know, world are we living in? This is amazing. And, you know, if you were to like lay out those five movies, you know, a year ago and say, okay, place them in the order that you think they will fall, I would have placed them in a very specific order, which would have been very different from the order in which they fell in terms of quality. And I think, I mean, it's close in some regards, but I think that this one is number one out of all five. And that's extremely impressive and unexpected. So yeah, I liked it a lot.
That's awesome, man. For me, I'm going to go without a five. And I would say that this is a three and a half star out of five, or three and a half batarangs first try. And so I like it, but I didn't love it, and I wanted to, and I go into every movie hoping that I'm really gonna like it, and that and obviously I'm a huge DC fan, I'm a huge Batman fan. Batman's right up there with Superman and Wonder Woman as my favorite all-time superheroes. So it's definitely not the best movie I've seen this year. Hidden Figures was the best movie I've seen this year.
That counts as last year.
So, but for me, it didn't come out till January. So, if I'm looking at it, it may be the best film I've seen this year, but I haven't seen very many movies this year. So, I don't know. I think maybe John Wick 2 beats it. So
I was definitely disappointed with John Wick 2. I mean, I liked it, but I was going into it like, is this good? Oh my God.
We'll do a little side episode here, but I'm right there with you. Like it is not as good as the first one. For sure.
Yeah, it's definitely not.
I mean, and I'm going to we'll do a tiny mini little John Wick thing, and everybody get a little bonus. Yeah. So, John Wick 2, were you frustrated as well that it's so much just, oh, well, now you have to see part 3? Because that pissed me off. I was like, come on, finish the story enough so that, like, I was just mad at that.
No, I mean, it took it to a different place, in the same way that the first one ended and it went to a different place. And I was okay with, leaving the door open to, expanding the world even more. I think that some of the places that this one went were a little weird. I don't necessarily buy all of it. And, I think that, this kind of suffered from the, Home Alone 2 syndrome of like, everyone liked the first one, so let's just do that, but more, and the first one was so sort of like clean in its narrative and in its action sequences and everything that I feel like there was almost no way to top it. I don't know why I thought that this one would top it. I guess because everyone was saying how great it was, but I was definitely disappointed with John Wick Chapter 2. But that being said, I'm very much looking forward to John Wick Chapter 3, whenever that comes out.
I absolutely agree with you, Mike. I absolutely agree with you. I feel like that what they need to make sure that they do for the next film is to not just have it be more of the same. Like, they have to change it up, or because I felt the fatigue in this one already of like, this, you just did this stuff last time, but it was better last time, Yeah. And so, if you go into, I want to see 3 because I'm feeling like that they're setting up this specifically to be a trilogy, and mm-hmm. then it'll be John Wick, the final chapter, which is great because Keanu is going to get too old to do this anyway. But yeah, they really do have to find their way to doing something that is completely different than what they've done in the first two films so that it feels fresh. And really, if they hope to kind of go out with a bang, which hopefully they're not trying to make this into a 20-film franchise. So,
Yeah.
Well, no, that was great. Now, I'm glad I got to talk about John Wick with somebody. So there you go, folks. A little bit of bonus there for you. I'm really excited that we got to talk through all of this stuff, though, with Lego Batman and John Wick. I hope that you've enjoyed the show. If you had, share it with people, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or whatever that is that you want to share the show. That really does help us grow. It's word of mouth that really helps any podcast grow. And so please do that for us here on Trek FM and with the 602 Club and with the star ratings reviews on iTunes. And really want to say thank you to some gentlemen who have believed in this show from the very beginning, Ken Tripp, Davis Grayson, and Norman Lau. Your support of the show as associate producers through Patreon means so much to me. So I really appreciate that. And they support the whole network with what they do here, not just the 602 Club. And you can too. We definitely need your help in that. So go to patreon.com/TrekFM and you can see the ways in which you can make sure that every single part of the Trek FM network keeps coming to you each and every week. We definitely need your support. There's no way that we here at the network by ourselves can make this happen. So again, go over to patreon.com/TrekFM and see how you can become part of the team. Man, Mike, it's been a long time since you've been here. And since then, you've added some new things to the Mike Schindler resume that everybody needs to be aware of. So where can they find you and what podcasts are you doing these days?
Well, you can find me right here on Trek FM doing Stage 9, where we talk about the people who make Star Trek. We just did an episode looking at your favorite movie, Pacific Rim, where we talk
about...
Not
my favorite movie.
The cinematographer.
Actually, my most hated movie of, like, the last 10 years. But,
that's so weird.
Yeah. It's awful, that's why.
But yes, we talk about that movie and Guillermo Navarro, the cinematographer. He's shooting the Discovery pilot, so that's exciting. And you can find me on thenerdparty.com doing Great Shot Kid, which is basically the same exact thing as Stage 9, only we talk about the people who make Star Wars instead of the people who make Star Trek. We just did an episode on American Graffiti. Looking
which was
at
a great episode, by the way. Everybody should be listening to that.
Thanks, appreciate that. And then you can find me over on commentarytrackstars.com doing Commentary Track Stars, where we do audio commentaries and various other things. We just did, as an interest to people on the network, perhaps, we just did a commentary for Star Trek Beyond, me and my co-host Max, where we dissect that movie. So check it out. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
Awesome, Mike. You can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me over on Instagram at MRushing. I'm here on the network with Chris Jones doing The Orb, talking about Deep Space Nine. We do hope to be back soon. You know, as long as Chris' health continues to improve, which we are very thankful that it is, your thoughts and prayers are definitely very, very much appreciated in that. Now, I encourage you, go over and check out the website, trek.fm. Choose The Orb. Check it out. I updated all the show pages, so there's a brand new look there. So I hope everybody will enjoy that as we gear up, hopefully, to come back with that show. Of course, you can find 602 Club and Star Wars, the 602 Club collection on iTunes, both of those feeds. If you love Star Wars and just want to get all the Star Wars episodes, that's there for you. On the Nerd Party Network, just like my good friend here, Mike, I'm doing Aggressive Negotiations with a man that we are both familiar with, John Mills, and we just talk Star Wars each and every week. It's fun, goofy, serious, silly, esoteric, weird. It's everything that you can fit in with Star Wars, and we talk about it all. That's Aggressive Negotiations. And then I'm doing Owlpost, the Harry Potter podcast with Drea Kaufman, and we are walking through every single chapter of Harry Potter one chapter at a time. So if you're like Mike and you've never really gotten into Harry Potter, it's kind of the perfect time to do it because we're going really slow and we're taking it a chapter at a time so everybody can read a chapter a week. If you're a huge fan, we also dive into some of the ways in which those chapters connect all over the place and what Rowling is doing. So I hope you will check both of those shows out, all of those shows. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and y'all come back now, you hear?